me, very special young lady, four-time Ironman 70.3 world champion, four-time Ironman world champion, Ironman world championship course record holder, and yesterday, the first time she raced Ironman 70.3 Oceanside, oh, I don't know, she broke the course record there. Please give it up from Switzerland, Daniela Reif. Yeah.
Here you go. Got your own chair.
So have you done many ocean swims like that, where you go through waves?
Yeah, I could actually tell. Yesterday I wasn't doing that well. I should have probably practiced a bit more. I trained in Australia, so I can take waves, you know, getting out. The day before I went in the ocean and actually I got out on a wave, like really long, and I was like, oh yeah, I still got it. But like 2 days before the race.
Yeah.
But then yesterday in the race, going into that wave, they were pretty big waves. I mean, I was, I could tell I was Swiss and not, you know, born somewhere close to the beach.
Now, you have raced in the US before, correct? And you come out here, what, about 10 years ago or something?
Yeah, exactly. It's actually, that's why it meant so much to me to come back to California, because in LA, 10 years ago, I think, 2009, I did my first, that's kind of where my non-drafting, you know, career started.
Yeah.
And I did the LA triathlon. And I had really good memories. I had my homestay actually staying on the course yesterday,
Who
I stayed with 10 years ago. So it was really nice to see, you know, some friends and from back then. And it also kind of makes you realize like how much can happen in 10 years, you know, like 10 years ago, no one knew me, you know, no one would care if I race. And it was a little bit different yesterday, I think.
A little bit. Then there was good crowds out there.
Yeah, it was amazing. I really enjoyed the crowds. The support was really inspiring. When I got here, I didn't feel so good. I was a bit sick when I was at home. I had, you know, it was snowing 2 weeks ago in Switzerland. And I got a cold and then jumped on the plane, which doesn't really help. And
no.
When I got off the plane, you know, you're in the Californian sun. It really helped to get some sun, but also that positive energy from the people here. I really appreciated it before the race, and it definitely helped me also to, you know, get healthy and show a good race yesterday. It really inspired me to, you know, go out there and push hard.
So growing up, what were your sports?
Well, I guess I could say I grew up as a triathlete. I mean, I started training for triathlons when I was 14, so it's been a few years. I started with swimming when I was 9.
Yeah.
And I did athletics, so like 1,000 meters and even everything, like, you know, how do you call it, that thing where you go?
A javelin.
Yeah, everything. So I was.
How did I do that? No idea. The thing where you go, yeah.
Yeah. So, I think it's good to do, you know, different stuff when you're a kid. I was only 10 back then, and I just enjoyed doing sports and being active. And then I was lucky enough to find my passion really early in some training camp for some youth. And there, that's where I met my coach and where I got into that triathlon club.
Right.
And it really was for me a big opportunity. It really showed me kind of a good path, and I fall in love with the sport, and also found really good friends back then. Like when I was 14, you know, it's not, you go to training not just to get fit, you know, you go to training because your friends are there, so that's something that's really important.
So when did you start feeling like you could become an Olympian and make the Swiss Olympic team in triathlon?
Yeah, it was actually never really my goal to be an Olympian or world champion. I just enjoy to train hard. I guess also see my friends at the training.
Yeah.
And then just kind of naturally happened, I guess. I was definitely a bit lucky also to get in touch with the right people at the right time. I had a really supportive coach when I was 14 up to 20. He really pushed me hard, and I think I could really, you know, develop myself as an athlete in a young age. And I think back then the Olympic national coach, when I was I think 20. That was a year before the Olympics. He suddenly said, oh, you know what, you could actually make it to the Olympics. And I was like, well, I think I'd just rather go to school. I'm fine. And so then he was like, well, you know, you can finish school and then you still have, I think it might have been 2006, in the end of 2006. And when I was finishing school 2007 in July. And so I had still 1 year. And so I was like, oh, you know, maybe it's an opportunity. And maybe. That's where I started to be professional just after I finished school. I took the chance and just went to Australia, trained with Darren Smith. And
yeah,
it's I've always tried to, you know, when you have an opportunity, you can either jump in or you can just let it pass. And I always made my decisions by feel. And when it felt right, I tried. And often it was the right decision. And even if it doesn't work out all the time, it's never a loss. You know, you can always learn something. And it was definitely a good decision to try because I made the Olympics in 2008.
You made the Olympic team in 2008 and you take seventh.
Yeah, that was...
First time out.
It was probably one of my best races in my life, to be honest. I would say you know, when you reach a result that's actually better you can achieve, I think that's what happened in the Olympics. I was really, I mean, for me, it was always hard to run this 10K super fast. And I would say it was within that year, I could really progress a lot. And from being just an athlete, you know, being okay for World Cups, within a year, I could actually make a difference in the race. And I really attacked the bike on that course in Beijing. Was really tough course.
Really a tough course.
And
yeah.
And then had a super good run. And so for me, that was really a result I was proud of. And even it's not a medal. So some people would say, you know, how can you be happy you didn't make a medal at the Olympics? I know for myself that it was the best I could possibly achieve. And I think that's what is... where the satisfaction comes. And
sure,
it still means the same for me now. Like, it's not winning is not what the success is. It's reaching the maximum of yourself and to get to that, you know, reach your capacity.
Right.
I think that's what you should always strive for and not for the result.
So then you build up. Yeah, there you go. You build up to 2012 and you go to your second Olympics. After the second Olympics, did you feel like you needed a different challenge at that point? Did you feel like you wanted to go a little longer, or were you thinking, okay, I'm going to go to 2016?
For me, from 2010 to 2012 was a bit of a difficult time because I got really sick. I had some stomach issues and took like over 1.5 years to get, you know, back healthy. And so back then I kind of just felt like the long or the non-drafting racing was fitting me better. Mm-hmm. That's kind of also what I started as a junior. Back then the junior races were not drafting,
right,
in Switzerland, so that's where I could also show my bike strength. And that's why London didn't go so well. I was still kind of not healthy, and when you don't train properly for 6 months, it's not like you can have a chance at Olympics, you know. it needs quite a bit of consistency. And so that's why I just, I wanted to try some new things. And I don't remember which race, but I did some 51-50.
Yes.
After the Olympics. And that's where I was like, that's what I like. I like to just go out there and do my thing and push on the bike. And that's where I decided I want to, in 2013, I wanted to do some non-drafting races. And it was just another decision like that. Also, I went home after the Olympics and said, okay, I need something else. I need to start studying. I need something else for my head. Because when you're professional and when you don't do well for like 2 years, there's a lot of time you can think about things. If you don't have anything else, you know, to, you know, go to work every day.
Sure.
And I think that's the hardest part of being a professional, because you can, everything goes well, it's quite easy. But if you have hard times, it's hard to get distracted. And sometimes distraction from work, of course, it can be tough because the recovery is so hard. But it's also nice to actually, when I started going back to uni, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I can go to uni because I didn't have to think about triathlon. And it really helped me actually to get healthy and just find that balance back in my life, because I would train in the morning, go to uni, and forget about my training. where if I was a professional, I would train in the morning and then have breakfast and think about my training. And it was like, oh, fuck, I was so bad today.
I was awful. Yeah. Yeah. There's not much. And then you're just depressed. And that doesn't help your next workout.
Exactly.
It's just, it's like a domino theory.
Exactly.
And when did you find Coach Brett Sutton?
That was another key moment, I guess. Yeah. I did in the end of 2013, I had the chance to go to Cozumel. That was for me first. I had actually a similar reaction, where like the reaction I had to go to the Olympics. I said to the national coach, no, I don't think it's possible because I'm just started my studies, and I always wanted to train once with Brett Sutton, but I didn't think it's possible to train with him because he was quite famous for very hard training, and I just kind of got back into my studies, and I wanted to focus on that also because I was quite happy just to have something else next to triathlon.
Sure.
And then I still said, okay, I mean, I can just go to that camp, see what happens, and then I can still make a decision. So I went to Cozumel, had there 2 weeks of training with him and the group, and yeah, it was not even a decision. I got home and I said, okay, I'm starting to train with him. And it was one of the best decisions, definitely.
Yeah.
He managed to actually train me next to my studies, and so back then, like in 2013, I pretty much studied 100%. So I mean, 100%, it's not for you guys, you probably all work, so that like studying 100% means going to study or going to uni for like maybe 25 or 30 hours,
right?
And then train maybe 20 hours. It's not that much, but still the day was
the
pretty
balance
cool.
Was good,
yeah,
for you.
So it was kind of a day from you start at 7 and you finish at maybe 8 or 9, and that was, yeah, I really loved it because,
yeah,
you really have to be efficient. You're like, you know, training, study, training, and then you go home and then you, I mean,
sleep and do it again
well,
the
I
next day.
Actually, to be honest, I had to work quite a lot on the studies because I was not studying for 5 years, and you lose a lot if you don't use your brain. it's pretty scary, but I really enjoyed it. And so, yeah, that was when I started with Brett, and he managed to find a good balance to not overtrain me.
Yes.
Because that was probably also a bit of my problem when,
right,
I trained myself. I always wanted more, and I was happy to train hard. So I might have also trained too much, and that's not always very smart.
So I look at 2014 as the big breakthrough year. And I remember you were thinking, I think 5150 is Olympic distance. It's something that Ironman had created. I don't think it exists much more in the States, but Olympic distance, and I think the Worlds that year were going to be in Zurich, right, for 5150. And it was the day before Ironman Switzerland, which is also in Zurich. And you wanted to do 5150 Worlds, right? And Brett wanted you to do the full Ironman the next day. And the compromise became that she would do both.
Yeah, I'm quite stubborn, so I said, I'm going to do 5150. And he said, well, if you're not doing the Ironman, I'm wasting my time with you. So, and I kind of wanted to keep training with him, so I didn't really have a choice. And So it was a little bit of a compromise. He said, okay, just, you know, you can just do the swim. You just ride your bike for a long time, and then you run, and then you can still stop.
You can stop anytime you want.
So that's kind of how he tricked me to do that.
But you won the 5150.
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy weekend. It was probably the most crazy weekend I've ever had. And I did the 5150, and then had a lot of food after that.
Yeah.
I didn't really even get time to get nervous because for me, back then it was still, I mean, my head, I was more like, you know, doing a 70.3 is possible and I really like that distance. But I always thought it's crazy to do an Ironman because it's just
too long.
It's too long and I just didn't want to do it, to be honest. I was like, no way you can do a race for so long. And yeah, he proved me wrong. I did the race the day after the 5150 and did the swim, went on the bike. After 10K, I had some cramps in my calves and I was like, oh, this is just, that's not, I don't like that stuff, you know?
It's, yeah, too,
it's
long.
Too long. I thought about still going 170K. And then I got halfway. I remember Natasha Batman caught me and I was like, oh, you know, maybe I should pick it up a bit. Like she just took 10, she put 10 minutes or she got, how do you say,
she made up 10 minutes on you after the swim.
On 90K.
Yeah.
And then I put up another gear and then I knew I could do 90K. So I started to put up, you know, another gear. And suddenly I kind of started to enjoy it. And
and then what a surprise.
I started to run and yeah, it's I think one of the best feelings when you actually realize what you're capable of.
When you surprise yourself.
I really didn't think I could do it. And then I was running out there and, you know, people cheering for me and I was leading the race. I was like, this is just crazy. I felt like in a dream. And yeah, of course, I started to struggle a bit after maybe 25K. My legs got pretty heavy, but I brought it home.
You won.
Yeah, I won.
That's how you say it. You won. You won. Yeah. And not only did you win, but now you're qualified for Kona.
Yeah.
So now you're qualified for Kona. And so now you go either a week later or 2 weeks later, you go to Wiesbaden in Germany.
Yeah.
That was the European 70.3 World Championships.
European Championship.
European, right. Yeah, European Championship, not World Championship. European Championships. And you win that. Yeah.
Yes. I think that's where after that Zurich race, I was in one part, I was a bit, you know, shocked that I made that. And I was really like, oh, wow, this is amazing. I started to believe I could be an Ironman.
Yeah.
I proved myself I was an Ironman, but I was like, oh, maybe I could actually do this. It's not that bad, you know.
when you win, it's sort of fun.
But then we started this discussion with Brett, you know, about Kona, and he was suddenly saying, you know, you could actually do pretty well there. Like, you could actually win this race. And I was like, oh, just stop. Like, stop talking like that, you know. I didn't believe it. And he was like, no, I'm serious. You could actually be really good at it. And then that's where he said, I want you to race Kona. And I was like, well, Kona is in like, I mean, that was end of July.
Yes.
And so that's only 3 months later is Kona.
Right.
So the qualification stopped, I think, mid or end of August.
Yeah.
So we only had 2 more weeks to qualify. And he said, you should do, 4 weeks later Copenhagen.
Yeah, it was Copenhagen.
Yeah, he was suggesting to do that so I could qualify for Kona. And I wasn't so convinced, to be honest, because I was still studying back then. And I was more, you know, kind of interested to finish my studies, to be honest. And then he kind of, pushed me again a bit out of my comfort zone. And I think it's sometimes good to have someone who pushes you out of the comfort zone because it makes you... Yeah, it makes you touch levels you wouldn't really touch otherwise. And so he convinced me to actually try it, to go to Kona. And
so didn't Zurich qualify you by winning the Ironman Switzerland?
No, I had to do another race.
You had to do another one. Okay, so then you went to... So you win the Ironman Switzerland, the 5150. Then you go and win Wiesbaden, which is 70.3, and that qualifies you for 70.3 Worlds.
Yeah, yep. And then 2 weeks later...
You went and did Copenhagen, which qualified you for Kona.
Yeah, and then 2 weeks later was World Championship.
And 2 weeks later was 70.3 Worlds, which you won.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
It was a crazy year.
Yeah, so basically in 8 weeks, she did 18,000 miles. figure that out. And I remember talking to Brett and saying, so Brett, knowing that Daniela has... This is all brand new to her, and she's got 70.3 Worlds and Ironman Worlds. What do you focus on? He goes, well, we got to focus on 70.3 Worlds because if we focus on Kona and Daniela doesn't have a good race at 70.3 Worlds, she probably won't go to Kona, right? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think he just wanted to, you know, build up my confidence.
Yes.
And for me, it was always to go to Kona was already like, yeah, I'm just going to go there and I don't know. I didn't really see any chance of doing well there at that point because it was for me so crazy to actually go to Kona. And for me, it was clear I wanted to do the 70.3 world. So I think he just let me do that as like a little, you know. A little treat. Like when, you know, when you have, you have the dog and you give him a little treat when he does something well. And then you
Good
actually
girl.
Give him the real work after.
Yeah.
I think I think that was his plan, and also to, yeah, so, you know, when you can tick off something, which is your goal, then it gives you a good feeling, and then you go into the next race also with a good attitude and like a bit of confidence, and yes, that always helps, yeah.
So you go to Kona, and I remember we did our first interview together there, mm-hmm, and we're at Hugo's, which is right on Ali'i Drive, and you had gotten in maybe Tuesday night or Wednesday night. Usually pros come in 3 weeks early. They came in like 3-4 days ahead of time, and we're sitting there at Hugo's, and Daniel was like, is this road here? Is this part of the race? And I was like, yeah, this is Ali'i Drive. This is. How much did you know about that race before you went over?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a bit embarrassing because it sounds like I didn't appreciate the race. I heard a lot about the race. I knew a lot about Natasha Batman, and I knew that she, you know, did this amazing race in these tough conditions in Hawaii, and I really admired her. But I didn't really actually know much about the race. So
sure.
Yeah, I got there late. I think it was also a bit of the tactic of my coach to not get me too much hyped up with the nerves. I was just, yeah, like for me, everything was quite new back then. And also the media attention was, it got really quickly bigger.
Yes.
And I wasn't really used to it. So by coming in late really helped to just avoid it a bit. And just, you know, I focused on my training and got in there and then pretty much raced. So yeah, I'm happy now. I know the course much better because I know where the hills is. I didn't even know coming out of Energy Lab there was a hill. So when I was in the race, it was a bit of a surprise that there was suddenly a hill coming. And you know, when you're tired, you don't really appreciate hills just suddenly coming up
out of nowhere. Yeah. So you get off the bike, I think a couple minute lead off of Rachel Joyce, but Marina Carfrae, who's 2-time champion at the time, is 14:30 back, and she catches you, 3 miles or so from the finish. But here you are leading, really, the most important triathlon in the world. Were you taking in the moment, and was it one of those things that everything had happened so fast that second place was still a big victory for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was one of the races I'm the most proud of. Even I didn't win, it was still, for me, an amazing race.
Yes.
I went there to just, you know, give all I had, and I think I always liked I liked the way of racing, to go out there and just push as much as you can, and that's what I did. I took my chance. I went hard on the bike and really left it all out there, and then I went on the run, and of course I did a few mistakes as a rookie. I think you can. I didn't really, you know, have my nutrition sorted back then. I still remember I asked a friend, I was like, can I have a chicken breast on the bike? And he said, no, I don't think you will have time. And then I remember I...
Stop at a local restaurant, get a little Thai food, yeah.
And so because I just thought, you know, maybe some protein could help me. And
yeah.
And then actually I took walnuts on the run. I had walnuts on the aid station, and just, you know, I don't know, I didn't really plan it through very well, but it was an amazing race, and I did everything I could, and
yes,
I really left it all out there. So for me, it was just as good as the win the
Absolutely.
Year later, and I'm really proud of that because I think it's about, you know, going out there and not be like, be brave and don't be shy on pushing, trying your best, because I think it's much worse to not try your best, and instead of, you know, when you're actually holding back and then you're at the finish and you're like, could I have gone a bit faster? Where in that year I knew it was just everything I had and I couldn't go any faster. And I think that's, to me, that was a very satisfying feeling.
Absolutely. And especially to come back the next year. And Marina Carfrae had a crash a couple days before the race, and she was a defending champion. And you end up winning by, you know, like 13 minutes over Rachel Joyce, and go under 9 hours, 8:57, which was awesome. How did that change? Now that you're the Ironman world champion, going back to Switzerland, Natasha Bodman, also from Switzerland, has won it 6 times. But did it change the perception of you over there?
I mean, to win 2015 was an amazing feeling, because especially, even I was really happy after 2014. Of course, I also realized, okay, I got to learn some things. You know, Miranda showed me, yeah, you know.
You better
run better. And that really inspired me. And I remember I got back after that race, and every time when I was running hard on the treadmill, I thought about Miranda all the time. And I was like, I'm going to run faster than you. I'm going to run faster than you. And that was about, yeah, I had her face in my head for like half a year. And I mean, it's not in a negative,
no,
you know, not in
no,
a disgraceful
motivational way.
I think you can really motivate yourself with, with people being better,
right,
and just, you know, look up to them and say, hey, she's better in the run, she showed a better job, she did a better job, and I also want to be as fast as her. And so that's what I focused on. And then coming back in 2015, yeah, that was definitely that feeling when you actually then do it right.
Yes.
That's amazing. And then coming home, it was definitely a lot of things changed. I could tell that winning Hawaii was pretty big. I mean, yeah, I actually was even, you know, I had Hawaii and then I went to do the Triple Crown. So it was a lot in that year. 2015 was a lot also. And then, yeah, the media attention definitely changed. And it's nice to see when you do, you know, when you do a good result, then the people at home recognize your effort,
right,
and your success. So, yeah, it was a good feeling to see that triathlon is in the media. And I also try to always, you know, push it because it is an amazing sport and
yes,
it deserves to be in the media.
That $1 million challenge, it was the Triple Crown was $1 million for winning all three of those races. 70.3 Worlds, Bahrain and Dubai, is that what it was?
Yes, correct.
Yep. Yeah, if you won all three that summer, you got $1 million bonus, correct? Yeah?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I can tell you one thing. If you're racing, if you get up in the morning and you know if you do that race well, you get $1 million. It's a weird thing because I don't race for money.
No.
I don't care. Like, I want to show good results. I want to impress people by, you know, being fast or impress myself or proving myself that, or more, maybe not proving. I want to show or find out for myself how fast I can go and how fit I can get. But it's still a little bit of pressure if you know, like, you know, if you tick that box, it's going to be
right,
a pretty big paycheck. So that was, yeah, actually, I didn't really enjoy it, to be honest.
Really? It's no, too much pressure, right?
It was a lot of just, yeah, you know, it's so close and it was a tough race.
It was a tough race, cool. When you got the check, but it was a lot of pressure going
yeah,
in. Yeah. then it made it better. Yeah. And 2016, Rennie's back, and you go out and you break the course record, 8:46:46, and you win by like 23 minutes. So, and then 17, all of a sudden we got this new gal, Lucy Charles, mm-hmm, who puts a gap on the swim and is still leading on the bike with about 40K to go by about 5 minutes. Then sometimes in a race you have to take a chance. And you took a chance.
Yeah, correct. I think 2:16 was my best race I've had in Kona. That was like everything went smooth. And then 2:17, my preparation went not perfect. I had my back injuries through the summer and then I got in there and I knew, yeah, Lucy was going really well. And it was great to see that she was, you know, not afraid, and she
yeah,
also just goes out there and races hard, and I really love it because that's also fun to watch for the spectators. And I think 2:17 was definitely an interesting race, I guess, for the people who watched it. I of course would have liked to catch her earlier, but I was trying hard. It was really I had a hard time on the bike there. I just pushed hard, but I didn't really move as fast as I wanted. And sometimes that happens.
I think we can relate to that. Yeah, I think we all have been there, yeah.
And, I knew if I want to change something now or want to change that race or that game, I needed to just find another gear. And so the last 40K where I think I still had 4 minutes.
Yes,
to make up. And so I was like, okay, I switched off my computer. I don't call my body a computer, but there back there I just kind of tried to make a reset exactly. And so I just said, okay, 40K to go, all out, don't even think about the run, just race as hard home as you can and then see if you're still alive. And that's kind of that was my plan. So
and,
I ran,
and it worked.
Yeah, I worked like 40K all out on the bike, and suddenly I found the gear somewhere, and it was really hurting, but I think it really changed that race because I could like sometimes it's not even how you feel, but when you actually can make a, when you actually can change something in a rhythm, mm-hmm. it can really then make a click. And then when you start to feel something positive, like I was starting to catch up, and that motivated me even more to push harder. And suddenly I got in that positive vibe again, where before I was like, oh, I'm just so sore, I can't do it anymore. And suddenly I found this positive energy and that positive attitude. And yeah, I really got into it. And then suddenly I was having fun again. And I think that's what always helps, like when you're out there, when you can enjoy it, even it's hurting a lot. If you kind of rock this thing, if you find a flow, or just, you know, yes. then that's where I personally go the fastest. And that's what I'm trying to find. And then when you realize you're actually moving faster than the other person in front of you, it gives you like a little bit of an advantage, because you know, okay, I'm making up time.
I'm catching that.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And then this year, you go into race, you got all sorts of preparation, everything you've done, but I'm guessing that a jellyfish sting isn't something that you had practiced or were ready for.
No, I haven't.
Yeah. So that happens right before the race starts. And that's probably one of the more painful. How many people have been stung by a jellyfish? Yeah.
Oh, wow. A lot.
A lot. Probably not when you're so speaking in Switzerland. You don't get the same hands up, right? But in San Diego, we live with jellyfish every day. Yeah. And how painful was that?
Well, it seems like it's just normal here, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody knows. It hurts.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, it was not the best timing, I guess.
Yes.
It happened like 2 minutes before the start, and just like under both the armpits. And it was not the best part where you get stung when you need your arms, because, I was surprised. I didn't really panic. I was just, okay, thinking, yeah, that didn't happen. And then I was kind of feeling it happen. I was feeling it happened. And then I thought, okay, maybe it helps me to, you know, get that fire going. And I was hoping that it would really, you know, just push me. And then the swim, yeah, I guess the people who watched the race will know I wasn't having my best swim, but... it's these moments you can't really prepare for. So it's always, I think, about finding some kind of motivation that gets you through things.
Right.
And I thought about so many things, you know, and quitting was definitely was very high up there, because I just didn't know if I can actually make this 3.8K. And so then I was close to quitting, but then I also thought, you know, going back to the hotel room and just crying about yourself is not really going to help me much.
Right.
Because it's probably going to make me feel worse. Because self-pity is not really, not nice, and also not very rewarding for yourself. So I just thought, okay, at least I can honor the race. You know, I was starting as a champion. And I think in our sport, it's not always about winning. It's about, you know, also finishing. I think it's making the effort.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I try to honor. And that's pretty much what pushed me through to just try to get out of that water somehow. Even I didn't even think about winning anymore. I just thought, okay, yeah, see you girls later, because I was somewhere back and I had no idea like where I was. I was just trying to, you know, take one stroke at a time and somehow get out of that water. And yeah, I'm glad I kept pushing, because the race or the day ended up totally different. And that's what's, I think, also so amazing about our sport, because you can, even if you had such a bad situation, it's never too late to turn it around, because it's a long day and you can feel so bad in the start. And then, I mean, I had one of the best races I've had. And
oh, you think?
I never thought about it.
You break the core, your own course record by 20 minutes. You go 8:26:18. You win by about 10 minutes over Lucy Charles. Yeah, yeah. So how did that? How did that day? Because like you said, it started out awful and ended up being the greatest victory of your career. How did that change the way you look at yourself when you have a day like that?
Yeah, it really woke me up a bit, to be honest.
Yeah.
I really realized, like, you know, that, yeah, bad moments are just temporary. You can always, you know, get out of them. And, yeah, and to not quit is something that's, it's so rewarding. Even I knew, like, if I would have finished last, I wouldn't have cared. I think it's still better to finish last than to quit.
Right.
And that's really got kind of like in my head. It actually even helped me for my yesterday's race, because before the race, I was not feeling that well, and I didn't know if my lungs were good enough to race, because it was kind of cold in the mornings. And then I thought, you know, it's for me not to start felt like almost like quitting, because I was already here.
Right.
And then I was like, you know, so often we kind of think about what people think if you do bad, and you have like your own expectations, and you want to reach your coach's expectation and your friend's expectations. But in the end, it doesn't really matter. Like, as long as you just give your best, even if you, yeah, if it totally goes bad, it's still always worth a try. And I think that really, yeah, that really helped me, like, with that story in Kona last year. I realized, like, it's, yeah, you can't really do bad as long as you give your best.
You can always draw on that. That's something that you'll always have. How about a round of applause for the amazing Daniela Reif?